Hello everyone, my name is Elijah Dave, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, now time for the 12th Hour in Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is February 5, 2017, or is 8 or 9, 2020. We will start our first service today with a song entitled, What a Friend We Have in Yahshua. And restoration. This is the original name of this book, Prophets and Kings. We know that Ellen G. White named it the Captivity and Restoration of the Israel. And so it says Ellen G. White is the author of it. She's also the author of the Patriarchs and Prophets, Acts of the Apostles, the Desire of Ages, and the Great Controversy. And so we're going to start with just chapter one. We're going to forego the other, the forward and stuff, even though it's a lot of good information. Let's just go with Solomon, is the name of our first chapter. In the reign of David and Solomon, Israel became strong among the nations and had many opportunities to wield a mighty influence in the behalf of the truth and the right. For the name of the Yahweh was exalted and held in the honor. And the purpose for which the Israelites had been established in the land of the promise bade fair of the meeting with the fulfillment. Barriers were broken down and seekers after the truth from the lands of the heathen were not turned away unsatisfied. Conversions took place, and the congregation of Yahweh on the earth was enlarged and prospered. Okay, Solomon was anointed and proclaimed king in the closing years of his father David, who abdicated in his favor. His early life was bright with the promise, and it was Yahweh's purpose that he should go on from strength to strength, from glory to glory, ever approaching nearer the similitude of the character of the Yahweh, and thus inspiring his people to fulfill their sacred trust as the depositories of the divine truth. For the David knew that the Yahweh's high purpose for the Israel could be met only as the rulers and people should seek with the unceasing vigilance for the attaining unto the standard placed before them. For he knew that in the order for his son Solomon to fulfill the trust with which the Elohim was pleased to honor him, the youthful ruler must be not merely a warrior, a statesman, and a sovereign, but a strong, good man, a teacher of the righteousness, an example of the fidelity. With a tender earnestness, David entreated Solomon to be manly and noble, to show mercy and loving kindness unto his subjects, and in all his dealings with the nations of the earth, to honor and glorify the name of Yahweh, and to make manifest the beauty of the holiness. The many trying and remarkable experiences through which the David had passed during his lifetime had taught him the value of the nobler virtue and led him to declare in his dying charge unto Solomon, "He that ruleth over men must be just, ruling in the fear of the Yahweh, and he shall be as the light of the morning when the sun arises, even a morning without clouds, as the tender grass springing out of the earth by the clear shining after the rain." 2 Samuel 23:3-4. Oh, what an opportunity was Solomon. Should he follow the divinely inspired instruction of his father, his reign would be a reign of righteousness, like that described in the 72nd Psalm. "Give the king thy judgment, O Yahweh, and thy righteousness unto the king's son. He shall judge thy people with righteousness, and thy poor with judgment. He shall come down like rain upon the mown grass, as showers that water the earth. In his day shall the righteous flourish, and abundance of the peace so long as the moon endureth. He shall have dominion also from sea to sea, and from the river unto the ends of the earth. For the kings of the Tarshish and of the Isles shall bring presents. The kings of Sheba and Seba shall offer gifts. Yea, all kings shall fall down before him. All nations shall serve him. For he shall deliver the needy when he crieth, the poor also in him that hath no helper. Prayer also shall be made for him continually, and daily shall he be praised. His name shall endure forever. His name shall be continued as long as the sun, and men shall be blessed in him. All nations shall call him blessed. Blessed be the Yahweh Elohim, the Elohim of Israel, who only doeth wondrous things. And blessed be his glorious name forever, and let the whole earth be filled with his glory. Amen and amen. In his youth, Solomon made David's choice his own, and for many years he walked uprightly, his life marked with the strict obedience of the Elohim's command. Early in his reign, he went with his counselors of the state to Gibeon, where the tabernacle that had been built in the wilderness still was. And there he united with his chosen advisors, the captains of the thousands and of the hundreds, the judges and every governor in all Israel, the chief of the fathers, in offering sacrifices to Yahweh and in consecrating themselves fully to the Yahshua's service. 2 Chronicles 1:2. Comprehending something of the magnitude of the duties connected with the kingly office, Solomon knew that those bearing heavy burdens must seek the source of the wisdom for guidance, that they would fulfill their responsibilities acceptably. Thus led him to encourage his counselors to unite with him heartily in the making sure of their acceptance with the Father. Above every earthly good, the king desired wisdom and understanding for the accomplishments of the work Elohim had given him to do. He longed for the quickness of mind, for largeness of heart, for tenderness of spirit. That night the Yahweh appeared unto Solomon in a dream and said, "Ask what I shall give thee." In his answer, the young and inexperienced ruler gave utterance unto his feeling of the helplessness and his desire for aid. "Thou hast showed unto thy servant David, my father, great mercy," he said, "according as he walked before thee in the truth, and in righteousness, and in the uprightness of heart with thee, and thou hast kept for him this great kindness, that thou hast given him a son to sit on his throne, as it is this day. And now, O Yahweh, my Elohim, thou hast made thy servant king instead of David my father, and I am but a little child. I know not how to go out or to come in. And thy servant is in the midst of thy people, which thou hast chosen, a great people that cannot be numbered nor counted for multitude. Give therefore thy servant an understanding heart to judge thy people, that I may discern between good and bad. For who is able to judge this, thy so great a people?" And the speech pleased the Yahweh that Solomon had asked this thing. "Because this was in thine heart," Yahweh said unto Solomon, "and thou hast not asked riches, wealth, or honor, nor the life of thine enemies, and neither yet hast asked long life, but hast asked wisdom and knowledge for thyself, that thou mayest judge my people. Behold, I have done according unto thy words. Lo, I have given thee a wise and an understanding heart, so that there was none like thee before thee. Neither after thee shall any arise like unto thee. And I have also given thee that which thou hast not asked, both riches and honor, such as none of the kings have had that have been before thee. Neither shall there any after thee have the like. And if thou wilt walk in my ways to keep my statutes and my commandments, as thy father David did walk, then I will lengthen thy days." 1 Kings 3, 5 to 14. 2 Chronicles 1, 7 to 12. Yahweh promised that as he had been with David, so he would be with Solomon. If the king would walk before the Yahweh in uprightness, if he would do what Elohim had commanded him, his throne would be established and his reign would be the means of exalting Israel as a wise and understanding people, the light of the surrounding nations, Deuteronomy 4, 6. The language used by the Solomon while praying unto Yahweh before the ancient altar at Gibeon reveals his humility and his strong desire to honor Yahweh. He realized that without divine aid he was as helpless as a little child to fulfill the responsibilities resting on him. He knew that he lacked discernment, and it was a sense of his great need that led him to seek Yahweh for wisdom. In his heart there was no self-aspiration for a knowledge of that would exalt him above others. He desired to discharge faithfully the duties devolving upon him, and he chose the gift that would be the means of causing his reign to bring glory unto Yahweh. Solomon was never so rich or so wise or so truly great as when he confessed, "I am but a little child. I know not how to go out or come in." Those who today occupy positions of trust should seek to learn the lesson taught by the Solomon's prayer. The higher the position a man occupies, the greater the responsibility that he has to bear. The wider will be the influence that he exerts, and the greater his need of the dependence on Yahweh. Ever should he remember that with the call to work comes the call to walk circumspectly, before his fellow man. He is to stand before Yahweh in the attitude of a learner. Position does not give holiness of character. It is by honoring Yahweh and obeying his commands that a man is made truly great. Yahweh, whom we serve, is no respecter of persons. He who gave to Solomon the spirit of wise discernment is willing to impart the same blessing to his children today. If any of you lack wisdom, his word declares, let him ask of Yahweh that giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. James 1:5. When a burden bearer desires wisdom more than he desires wealth, power, or fame, he will not be disappointed. Such a one will learn from the great teacher not only what to do, but how to do it in a way that will meet with the divine approval. So long as he remains consecrated, the man whom Yahweh has endowed with discernment and ability will not manifest an eagerness for high position, neither will he seek to rule or control. Of a necessity, men must bear responsibility, but instead of striving for the supremacy, he who is a true leader will pray for an understanding heart to discern between the good and the evil. So he says, he that is a true leader, see, for the path of the men who are placed as leaders is not an easy one, but they are to see in every difficulty a call to prayer. Never are they to fail of the consulting the great source of all wisdom. Strengthened and enlightened by the master worker, they will be able to stand firm against unholy influences and to discern right from the wrong, good from the evil. They will approve that which Elohim approves and will strive earnestly against the introduction of wrong principle into his life. For the wisdom that Solomon desired above riches, honor, or long life, Yahweh gave him. His petition for a quick mind, a large heart, and a tender spirit was granted. Yahweh gave Solomon wisdom and understanding exceeding much, and largeness of heart, even as the sand that is on the seashore. And Solomon's wisdom excelled the wisdom of all the children of the east country, and all the wisdom of Egypt, for he was wiser than all men. And his fame was in all nations round about, 1 Kings 4:29 and 31. And all Israel feared the king, for they saw that the wisdom of Yahweh was in him to do judgment. 1 Kings 3:28. The hearts of the people were turned towards Solomon, as they had towards David, and they obeyed him in all things. Solomon was strengthened in his kingdom, and the Yahweh his Elohim was with him, and magnified him exceedingly. 2 Chronicles 1:1. For many years Solomon's life was marked with the devotion to Yahweh, with uprightness and firm principle, and with strict obedience unto Yahweh's command. He directed in every important enterprise and managed wisely the business matters connected with the kingdom. His wealth and kingdom, the magnificent buildings and public works that he constructed during the early years of his reign, the energy, piety, justice, and magnanimity that he revealed in the word and deed, won the loyalty of his subjects and the admiration and homage of the rulers of the many lands. The name of the Yahweh was greatly honored during the first part of Solomon's reign. The kingdom and righteousness revealed by the king bore witness unto all nations of the excellency of the attributes of the Yahweh whom he served. For a time Israel was as the light of the world, showing forth the greatness of the Yahweh, not in the surpassing wisdom, the fabulous riches, the far-reaching power, and the fame that were his lay the real glory of the Solomon's early reign, but in the honor that he brought to the name of the Yahweh of Israel through a wise use of the gifts of heaven. As the years went by and Solomon's fame increased, he sought to honor Yahweh by adding to his mental and spiritual strength, and by continuing to impart to others the blessings he received. None understood better than he that it was through the favor of Yahweh that he had come into the possession of the power and wisdom and understanding, and that these gifts were bestowed that he might give to the world the knowledge of the King of Kings. Solomon took an especial interest in the natural history, but his researches were not confined to any one bunch of learning. Through a diligent study of all created things, both animate and inanimate, he gained a clear conception of the Creator and the forces of nature and the mineral and the animal world, and in every tree and shrub and flower he saw a revelation of Yahweh's wisdom. And as he sought to learn more and more, his knowledge of Yahweh and his love for him constantly increased. Solomon's divinely inspired wisdom found expression in the songs of praise and in many proverbs. He spake 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005. And he spake to trees, from the cedar tree that is in Lebanon, even unto the hyssop that springeth out of the wall. He spake also of the beast, and the fowl, and of creeping things, and of fishes, 1 Kings 4:32-33. In the proverbs of the Solomon are outlined principles of the holy living and high endeavor, principles that are heaven-born and that leads to righteousness, principles that should govern every act of life. It was a wide dissemination of these principles and the recognition of Yahweh as the one unto whom all praise and honor belong that made Solomon's early reign a time of the moral uplift as well as of the material prosperity. Happy is the man that findeth wisdom, he wrote, and the man that getteth understanding. For the merchandise of it is better than the merchandise of silver, and the gain thereof than fine gold. She is more precious than rubies, and all the things that thou canst desire are not to be compared unto her. Length of days is in her right hand, and in her left hand riches and honor. Her ways are ways of the pleasantness, and all her paths are peace. She is a tree of life unto them that lay hold upon her, and happy is every one that retaineth her. Proverbs 3:13-18. Wisdom is the principal thing, therefore get wisdom, and with all thy getting get understanding. Proverbs 4:7. Fear the Yahweh is the beginning of wisdom. Psalms 111:10. The fear of the Yahweh is to hate evil, pride and arrogancy, and the evil way, and the froward mouth do I hate. Proverbs 8:13. Oh, that in latter years Solomon had heeded these wonderful words of the wisdom. Oh, that he who had declared the lips of the wise disperse knowledge. Proverbs 15:7. And who had himself taught the kings of the earth to render to the king of the kings the praise they desired to give to an earthly ruler, had never with a froward mouth and pride and arrogancy taken to himself the glory due unto Yahweh alone. Okay, end of chapter 1. Let's go into chapter number 2 now, the temple and its dedication. The long-cherished plan of David to erect a temple unto the Yahweh, Solomon wisely carried out. For 7 years, Jerusalem was filled with busy workers engaged in leveling the chosen site and building vast retaining walls and laying broad foundations, great stones, costly stones, and huge stones, and shaping the heavy timbers brought from the Lebanon forest, and in erecting the magnificent sanctuary, 1 Kings 5:17. Simultaneously with the preparation of the wood and stone, by which tasks many a thousand were bending their energies, the manufacturer of the furnishings for the temple was steadily progressing. Under the leadership of the Hiram of Tyre, a cunning man endued with the understanding, skillful to work in the gold and in silver, and brass and iron and stone and in the timber, in purple and blue and in fine linen and in crimson, 2 Chronicles 2:13-14. Just as the building on Mount Moriah was noiselessly upreared, with the stone made ready before it was brought thither, so that there was neither hammer nor axe nor any tool of iron heard in the house while it was in the building, the beautiful fittings were perfected according unto the patterns committed by the David and to his son. All the vessels that were for the house of Yahweh, 1 Kings 6:7, 2 Chronicles 4:19, these included the altar of incense, the table of the showbread, the candlestick and lamp, with the vessels and the instruments connected with the administration of the priests in the holy place, all of the gold and that perfect gold. 2 Chronicles 4:21. The brazen furniture, the altar of burnt offering, the great laborer supported by the 12 oxen, the laborers of the small size, with many other vessels in the plain of Jordan did the king cast them in the day, in the clay ground between Sukkoth and Zedorotah. 2 Chronicles 4:17. These furnishings were provided in abundance, and that there should be no lack. Of the surpassing beauty and unrivaled splendor was a palatial building which Solomon and his associates erected for Yahweh and his worship. Garnished with the precious stones, surrounded by the spacious courts with the magnificent approaches, and lined with the carved cedar and burnished gold, the temple structure, with its broidered hangings and rich furnishing, was a fit emblem of the living congregation of Yahweh on the earth, and through the ages has been built in accordance with the divine pattern, with the materials that have been likened unto gold, silver, precious stone, polished as the similitude of a palace. 1 Corinthians 3:12, Psalms 144:12. Of this spiritual temple, Yahshua is the chief cornerstone, in whom all the building fitly framed together groweth unto an holy temple in the Yahweh, Ephesians 2:20-21. At last, the temple planned by King David and built by Solomon his son was completed. All that came into Solomon's heart to make in the house of Yahweh, he had prosperously effected. 2 Chronicles 7:11. And now, in the order that the palace crowning the highest of the Mount Moriah might indeed be, as David had so much desired, a dwelling place, not for man, but for the Yahweh Elohim. 1 Chronicles 29:1. There remained the Solomon's ceremony of the formerly dedicating it unto Yahweh and his worship. The spot on which the temple was built had long been regarded as a consecrated place. It was here that Abraham, the father of the faithful, had revealed his willingness to sacrifice his only son in obedience unto the command of Yahweh. Here Yahweh had renewed with Abraham the covenant of the blessing, which included the glorious messianic promise to the human race of the deliverance through the sacrifice of the Son of the Most High. See Genesis 22:9-16-18. Here it was that when David offered burnt offerings and peace offerings to stay the avenging sword of the destroying angel, Yahweh had answered him by fire from heaven. See 1 Chronicles 21. And now once more, the worshippers of the Yahweh were here to meet their Elohim and renew their vows of allegiance unto him. For the time chosen for the dedication was a most favorable one. The seventh month, when the people from every part of the kingdom were accustomed to assemble at the Jerusalem to celebrate the Feast of Tabernacle, the feast was preeminently an occasion of rejoicing. For the labors of the harvest being ended, and the toils of the new year not yet begun, the people were free from care and could give themselves up to the sacred, joyous influences of the hour. At the appointed time, the host of the Israel, with the richly clad representatives from many foreign nations, assembled in the temple courts. The scene was one of the unusual splendor. Solomon, with the elders of Israel, and the most influential men among the people, had returned from another part of the city, whence they had brought the Ark of the Testament from the sanctuary on the heights of Gibeon, had been transferred the ancient tabernacle of the congregation, and all the holy vessels that were in the tabernacle, 2 Chronicles 5:5, and these cherished reminders of the earlier experiences of the children of Israel during their wanderings in the wilderness and their conquest of the Canaan, now found a permanent home in the splendid building that had been erected to take the place of the portable structure. In the bringing unto the temple the sacred ark containing the two tables of stone on which were written by the finger of Yahweh the precepts of the Decalogue, Solomon had followed the example of his father David. Every six paces he sacrificed, with singing and with music and with great ceremony. The priest brought in the Ark of the Covenant of Yahweh unto his place, unto the oracle of the house, unto the most holy place. Verse 7. As they came out of the inner sanctuary, they took the positions assigned them. The singers, Levites, arrayed in white linen, having cymbals and psalteries and harps, stood at the east end of the altar, and with them 120 priests sounding with the trumpets. See verse 12. It came even to pass, as the trumpeters and singers were as one to make one sound to be heard in praising and thanking the Yahweh. And when they lifted up their voice with the trumpets and cymbals and instruments of music and praised Yahweh, saying, "For he is good, for his mercy endureth forever," that then the house was filled with a cloud, even the house of Yahweh, so that the priest could not stand to minister by reason of the cloud. For the glory of Yahweh had filled the house of Yahweh. Verses 13 and 14. Realizing the significance of this cloud, Solomon declared, "Yahweh has said that he would dwell in the thick darkness, but I have built a house of the habitation for thee, and a place for thy dwelling forever." 2 Chronicles 6:1-2. The Yahweh reigneth, let the people tremble. He sitteth between the cherubims. Let the earth be moved. The Yahweh is great in Zion, and he is high above all the people. Let them praise thy great and terrible name, for it is holy. Exalt ye the Yahweh or Elohim, and worship at his footstool, for he is holy. Psalms 99:1-5. In the midst of the court of the temple had been erected a brazen scaffold or platform, 5 cubits long and 5 cubits broad and 3 cubits high. Upon this Solomon stood and with the uplifted hands blessed the vast multitude before him. Now all the congregation of Israel stood, 2 Chronicles 6:13-3. "Blessed be the Yahweh Elohim of Israel," Solomon exclaimed, "who hath with his hands fulfilled that which he spake with his mouth to my father David, saying, Now I have chosen Yerushalayim that my name might be there. Verse 46. Solomon then knelt upon the platform, and in the hearing of all the people offered the dedicatory prayer, lifting his hands toward heaven while the congregation were bowed with their faces to the ground. The king pleaded, Yahweh Elohim of Israel, there is no Elohim or no Yahweh like thee in the heaven nor in the earth, which keepeth covenant and showeth mercy unto thy servants that walk before thee with all their heart. Will Elohim in very deed dwell with men on the earth? Behold, heaven and the heaven of heavens cannot contain thee. How much less this house which I have built? How have respect therefore unto the prayer of thy servant, and do his supplication, and unto his supplication, O Yahweh my Elohim, to hearken unto the cry and the prayer which thy servant prays before thee, that thine eyes may be opened upon this house day and night, upon the place whereof thou hast said that thou wouldest put thy name there, to hearken unto the prayer which thy servant prayeth toward this place. Hearken therefore unto the supplications of thy servant and of thy people Israel, which they shall make toward this place. Hearken thou from thy dwelling place, even from heaven, and when thou hearest, forgive. If thy people Israel be put to the worse before the enemy, because they have sinned against thee, and shall return and confess thy name, and pray and make supplication before thee in this house, then hear thou from the heavens, and forgive the sin of thy people, Israel, and bring them again unto the land of which thou gavest unto them and to their fathers. When the heaven is shut up and there is no rain, because they have sinned against thee, yet if they pray toward this place and confess thy name and turn from their sin, when thou dost afflict them, then hear thou from heaven and forgive the sin of thy servants and of thy people Israel, when thou hast taught them the good way wherein they should walk, and send rain upon thy land which thou hast given unto thy people for an inheritance. If there be dearth in the land, if there be pestilence, if there be blasting or mildew, locusts or caterpillars, if their enemies besiege them in the cities of their land, whatsoever sore or whatsoever sickness there be, then what prayer or what supplication soever shall be made of any man or of all thy people Israel, when every one shall know his own sore and his own grief, and shall spread forth his hand in his house, then hear thou from heaven, thy dwelling place, and forgive and render unto every man according unto all his ways, whose heart thou knowest, that they may fear thee to walk in thy ways so long as they live in the land which thou gavest unto our fathers. Moreover, concerning the stranger which is not of thy people Israel, but is come from a far country for thy great name's sake, and thy mighty hand and thy stretched out arm, if they come and pray in this house, then hear thou from the heavens, even from thy dwelling place, and do according unto all that the stranger calleth unto thee for, that all people of the earth may know thy name, and fear thee, as doth thy people Israel, and may know that this house which I have built is called by thy name. If thy people go out to war against their enemies by the way that thou shalt send them, and they pray unto thee toward this city which thou hast chosen, and the house which I have built for thy name, and then hear thou from the heavens their prayer and their supplication, and maintain their cause. If they sin against thee, for there is no man which sinneth not, and thou be angry with them, and deliver them out over before their enemies, and they carry them away captives into a land far off or near. Yet if they bethink themselves in the land whither they are carried captive, and turn and pray unto thee in the land of their captivity, saying, We have sinned, we have done amiss, and have dealt wickedly, if they return unto thee with all their heart and with all their soul in the land of their captivity, whither they have carried them captive, and pray toward their land, which thou gavest unto their fathers, and toward the city which thou hast chosen, and toward the house which I have built for thy name, then hear thou from the heaven, even from thy dwelling place, their prayer and their supplications, and maintain their cause, and forgive thy people which have sinned against thee. Now, my Elohim, let, I beseech thee, thine eyes be open, and let thine ears be attent unto the prayer that is made in this place. Now therefore arise, O Yahweh Elohim, into thy resting place, thou and the ark of thy strength. Let thy priests, O Yahweh Elohim, be clothed with the salvation, and let thy saints rejoice in the goodness, O Yahweh Elohim. Turn not away the face of thine anointed. Remember the mercies of David thy servant. Verse 14-42. As Solomon ended his prayer, fire came down from heaven and consumed the burnt offering and the sacrifices. For the priests could not enter the temple because the glory of the Yahweh had filled the Yahweh's house. When all the children of Israel saw the glory of the Yahweh upon the house, they bowed themselves with their faces to the ground upon the pavement and worshipped and praised the Yahweh, saying, For he is good, for his mercy endureth forever. For the king and people offered sacrifice before the Yahweh, so the king and all the people dedicated the house of the Yahweh. 2 Chronicles 7:1-5. For 7 days the multitudes from every part of the kingdom, from the borders of Hamath unto the river of Egypt, a very great congregation, kept a joyous feast. The week following was spent by the happy throng in the observing the Feast of the Tabernacles. At the close of the season of the reconstruction, or the reconsecration and rejoicing, the people returned unto their homes, glad and merry in the heart for the goodness that the Yahweh had showed unto David, and unto Solomon, and unto Israel, his people. Verse 8-10. The king had done everything within his power to encourage the people to give themselves wholly unto Yahweh and his service and to magnify his holy name. And now once more, as at Gibeon early in his reign, Israel's ruler was given evidence of the divine acceptance and blessing. In a night vision, the Yahweh appeared unto him with the message, I have heard thy prayer and have chosen this place unto myself for an house of sacrifice. If I shut up heaven that there be no rain, or if I command the locusts to devour the land, or if I send pestilence among my people, if my people which are called by my name shall humble themselves and pray, and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and will heal their land. Now mine eyes shall be open, and mine ears attend unto the prayer that is made in this place. For now have I chosen and sanctified this house, that my name may be there forever. And mine eyes and mine heart shall be there perpetually. Verses 12-16. Had Israel remained true unto Yahweh, this glorious building would have stood forever, a perpetual sign of the Elohim, special favor unto his chosen people, the sons of the stranger. Yahweh declared that join themselves to Yahweh to serve him, and to love the name of the Yahweh, to be his servants, every one that keepeth the Sabbath from polluting it, and taketh hold of my covenant, even them will I bring to my holy mountain, and make them joyful in my house of prayer. Their burnt offerings and their sacrifices shall be accepted upon mine altar, for mine house shall be called a house of prayer for all people. Isaiah 56:6-7. In connection with these assurances of the acceptance, Yahweh made very plain the path of duty before the king. As for thee, he declared, if thou wilt walk before me, as David thy father walked, and do according unto all that I have commanded thee, and shalt observe my statutes and my judgments, then will I establish the throne of thy kingdom according as I have covenanted with David thy father, saying, there shall not fail thee a man of the ruler in the Israel. 2 Chronicles 7:17-18. Had Solomon continued to serve Yahweh in humility, his entire reign would have exerted powerful influence for good over the surrounding nations, nations that had been so favorably impressed by the reign of David his father, and by the wise words and the magnificent works of the earlier years of his own reign. Foreseeing the terrible temptations that attend prosperity and worldly honor, Yahweh warned Solomon against the evil of the apostasy and foretold the awful results of sin. Even the beautiful temple that had just been dedicated, he declared, would become a proverb and a byword among all nations, should the Israelites forsake the Yahweh Elohim of their father and persist in the idolatry, verses 20-22. Strengthened in the heart and greatly cheered by the message from the heaven that his prayer in behalf of the Israel had been heard, Solomon now entered upon the most glorious period of his reign. When all the kings of the earth began to seek his presence, to hear his wisdom that Yahweh had put in his heart, 2 Chronicles 9:23. Many came to see the manner of his government and to receive instruction regarding the conduct of the difficult affairs. As these people visited Solomon, he taught them of Yahweh as the creator of all things, and they returned to their homes with clear conception of the Elohim of Israel and of his love for the human race. And the works of nature, they now beheld an expression of his love and a revelation of his character, and many were led to worship him as their Elohim. For the humility of the Solomon at the time he began to bear the burdens of the state, and he acknowledged before the Yahweh, I am but a little child, 1 Kings 3:7. His marked love of Yahweh, his profound reverence for the things divine, his distrust in self, and his exaltation of the infinite creator of all these traits of character so worthy of the emulation were revealed during the services connected with the completion of the temple. When during his dedicatory prayer he knelt in the humble position of a petitioner for the Yahshua's followers today should guard against the tendency to lose the spirit of the reverence and of righteous fear. For the scriptures teach men how they should approach their Maker with humility and awe through faith in a divine mediator. For the psalmist has declared, the Yahweh is a great Elohim and a great King above all Elohim. O come, let us worship and bow down. Let us kneel before the Yahweh our Maker. Psalms 95:3-6. Both in the public and in the private worship, it is our privilege to bow on our knees before Yahweh when we offer our petition unto Him. Yahshua, our example, kneeled down and prayed. Luke 22:41. Of his disciples, it is recorded that they too kneeled down and prayed. Acts 9:40. Paul declared, I bow my knees unto the Father of our Savior Yahshua Messiah. Ephesians 3:14. In confessing before Elohim the sins of Israel, Ezra knelt. See Ezra 9:5. Daniel kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his Elohim. Daniel 6:10. True reverence for Yahweh is inspired by a sense of His infinite greatness and a realization of His presence. With this sense of the unseen, every heart should be deeply impressed, for the hour and place of the prayer are sacred, because Elohim is there. There it is right there. The hour, for the hour and the place of the prayer are sacred, because Yahweh is there. And as that reverence is manifested in the attitude and demeanor, the feeling that inspires it will be deepened. Holy and reverent is His name. The psalmist declares, Psalms 111:9. Angels, when they speak that name, veil their faces. With what reverence, then, should we, who are fallen and sinful, take it upon our lips? We would, well would it be for old and young to ponder those words of the Scripture that show how the place marked by the Elohim's special presence should be regarded. Put off thy shoes from off thy feet, he commanded Moses at the burning bush, for the place wherein thou standest is holy ground. Exodus 3:5. Jacob, after beholding the vision of the angel, exclaimed, Yahweh is in this place, and I knew it not. This is none other but the house of Yahweh, and this is the gate of heaven. Genesis 28:16-17. So this is the same thing here. When you establish the sacred hour in your home, twice a day, then the Yahweh's presence is there. And this is the same scene that Moses had at Horeb, when he turned aside to the burning bush. No doubt it was at the sacred hour of the day. No doubt to me it was at the sacred hour. It was at that third hour in the afternoon. It was at that ninth hour. No doubt. Or it could have been at the early morning hour in the morning. It could have been at the third hour. Those are both sacred hours. And that which was said during the dedicatory services, Solomon had sought to remove from the minds of those present the superstitions in regard unto the Creator that had beclouded the minds of the heathen, the Elohim of heaven. It's not like the gods of the heathen confined to temples made with hands, yet he would meet with his people by his Spirit when they should assemble at the house dedicated unto his worship. Centuries later, Paul taught the same truth in the words, Yahweh that made the world and all things therein, seeing that he is the Elohim of the Yahweh of the heaven and earth, dwelleth not in temples made with hands, neither is worshipped with men's hands, as though he needed anything, seeing he giveth to all life and breath and all things, that they should seek the Yahweh, if happy they might feel after him and find him, though he be not far from every one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being. Acts 17:24-28. Blessed is the nation whose Elohim is the Yahweh, whose Yahweh is the Yahweh, and the people whom he hath chosen for his own inheritance. For the Yahweh looketh from the heaven. He beholdeth all the sons of men from the place of his habitation. He looketh upon all the inhabitants of the earth. Yahweh hath prepared his throne in the heaven, and his kingdom ruleth over all. Yahweh, O Yahweh, is in the sanctuary. Who is so great a Yahweh as our Yahweh? Thou art the Elohim thou art the Yahweh that doeth wonders. Thou hast declared thy strength among the people. Psalms 33:12-14. 103:19, Psalm 77:13-14. Although Yahweh dwells not in the temples made of the hands, yet he honors with his presence the assemblies of his people. He has promised that when they come together to seek him, to acknowledge their sins, and to pray for one another, he will meet with them by his Spirit. That those who assemble to worship him should put away every evil thing. Unless they worship him in the Spirit and in the truth and in the beauty of holiness, their coming together will be of no avail. As such the Yahweh declares, his people draweth nigh unto me with their mouths and honoreth me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. Matthew 15:8-9. Those who worship Elohim must worship him in the Spirit and in the truth, for the Father seeketh such to worship him. John 4:23. And that worshiping him in the Spirit and in the truth. The truth is that he has set aside 2 hours of the day that are called sacred hours because his presence is there to meet with us at those hours. And so this is for his leaders that are going to set up his temple for true worship. This is for them to do. The Yahweh is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. Habakkuk 2:20. Well, this ends chapter 2, and the temple and its dedication by the Solomon. And we're getting close to the end of our hour. We have about, actually, 3 minutes left in our hours. We'll do a little review. I like that part where it talked about the true reverence for the Yahweh is inspired by a sense of His infinite greatness and a realization of His presence. It's a realization, you know, it takes a lot of faith, really, to think about when you kneel to pray that you're actually communicating with heaven and that they're hearing your prayers. We do this by faith, believing that our prayers will be heard. We have great needs and we ask for them. And so we expect Yahweh to just answer our prayers. But we're going to have to do as much as, at least as much as Daniel did, and that is to pray at the sacred hour and always come kneeling. Remember to kneel. Okay, it says, so, I thought that was very interesting. It says, true reverence to Yahweh is inspired by a sense of His infinite greatness and a realization of His presence. With this sense of the unseen, every heart should be deeply impressed. The hour and the place of the prayer are sacred. So, Yahweh has chosen this place here, and so this, at the sacred hour, this would be the place that He has chosen. Because Elohim is there, and as reverence is manifested in the attitude and demeanor, the feeling that inspires it will be deepened. Holy and reverent is His name, as the psalmist declares, Psalms 111, verse 9. Angels, when they speak that name, veil their faces. With what reverence then should we, who are fallen and sinful, take it upon our lips? Take upon our lips that sacred name. Okay. Well, this brings the end of our study this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with a song. Who at my door standing? Who at my door is standing, patiently drawing near? Entrance within demanding, whose is the voice I hear? Sweetly the tongues are falling, open the door for me. If Thou wilt heed my calling, I will abide with Thee. All through the dark hours dreary, knocking again is He. Yeshua, Thou not weary, waiting so long for me. Sweetly the tongues are falling, open the door for me. If Thou wilt heed my calling, I will abide with Thee. Door of my heart I hasten, Thee will I hope and wide. Though He rebuke and chasten, He shall with me abide. Sweetly the tongues are falling, open the door for me. If Thou wilt heed my calling, I will abide with Thee.